I'm Snoop Dogg, and I'm giving up smoke. I know what you're thinking. Snoop, smoke is kind of your whole thing. But I'm done with it. I'm done with the coughing and my clothes smelling all funky. I'm going smokeless. Solo stove, fixed fire. They took out the smoke. Now you can have a nice blaze without any clouds ruining your day. Go smokeless. Go to solostove.com. Tell them Big Snoop Dogg sent you.
Hey there, football fans. I'm Brian Baldinger, and I'm thrilled to introduce you to The Best Football Show, a podcast that's an exhilarating journey through the world of the National Football League. Join me each weekday, breaking down those spine-tingling moments, dissecting top players, and offering my unique perspective. Prepare to get smarter about the game we all love with every episode of The Best Football Show, where the game comes to life. Huddle up with me for a football experience like no other. Follow The Best Football Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rod Moore from the Michigan football team joining us, still to come in an hour 20 from now, the head coach of the Oregon Ducks in Dan Lanning. But now joining us in the studio right now on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio is former NFL linebacker Sean Merriman. Make sure you check out Lights Out Extreme Fighting, which Sean does run, and their next big card coming up is Saturday, January 6th. And Sean is kind enough to join us right now in studio. Sean, appreciate the time. How you been?
What's up, my man? How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I got to start you off with what Tom Brady had to say about a week ago.
Yeah.
Where the NFL is now a mediocre product. When you heard TB12 say that, how'd you react to it?
Well, look, there was definitely some truth in what he said, right? I think a lot of things have been watered down because of the rules. And let's be honest, the reason why this country loves football is the violence and the bruteness of it, right? I remember my coaches in high school when it was in training camp, we were tired and we were all beat up, and they would always say that if it was easy, everybody would do it. So, right? So, like, nobody wants to go out there and get hit. I mean, that's the fascination with, you know, football, NFL, the size of the guys, the speed, the explosion. So that's why this country loves football. So he had a point in what he said. Now, I don't like who it came from, right? Because a lot of these rules were established because of guys like Tom Brady. In 2007 or 2008, when he tore his ACL, because we were out, I think, in the same 2008, right? Mm-hmm. I think we were out the same year.
Yeah, it was right after the undefeated season.
After the undefeated season. Well, they established the no-hitting quarterback rules and started looking at it because of him. So I get it and understand. I know he complained to the refs a lot. Now, don't get me wrong. Tom Brady took a beating while he played. He was knocked around. He was tough as nails. I mean, I've hit him plenty of times and thought he wasn't getting up. He did, right? He's tough. But those rules were established when those things happened to him, right? So the NFL started looking at it like, hey, we can't have our marquee guys to miss time, miss games, starting with Tom Brady. So I get what he was saying. He was right to the mediocre part of it, right? Because a lot of what's happening is starting to kind of water down what football has truly meant to all of us. And the reason why I started to play the game, because of the physicality of the sport. So he was right in that standpoint. I wish that he would have said, hey, a lot of these rules got started because of what happened to me in 2008. I think that would have made his point much more clear.
The other thing, too, I thought was interesting was he said when you see a player like Ray Lewis on the field, you would know as a quarterback not to put a ball in a certain spot or a certain window because Ray Lewis would be there to blow up your wide receiver or your running back. And now the quarterbacks know it. And Brady knew it at the end of his career, too.
Right.
You could get away with so much stuff because a defender could make a good hit now, and then you see the yellow handkerchief on the field.
Yeah, and so – the parts that I was agreeing with Tom was that he's right about it, right? You throw the ball low or you throw it away from the defender so he has a time to tuck and cover up, right? And every quarterback knows that. And it's at a point now where a guy may just throw the ball down the field because the possibilities of a pass interference are 80%+ on a deep ball that's thrown high, a jump ball, right? And so he had a great point in talking about those things because a lot of those things happen. And, yes, you want to get your wide receivers and your offensive guys away from harm, right? Throw it on the back shoulder. Don't throw it across the middle. Anytime you start to see these wide receivers with the alligator arms, right, don't throw those passes. And so I think that with the quarterbacks now, between the jump balls, deep balls, you know, not being able to physically contact a guy after 5 yards, which is almost impossible. Look, cornerback is the hardest position to play on the field. You know, I'll argue to I'm blue in the face with anybody. Cornerback position is the hardest to play on the field. Now, if you throw in a hey, you can't touch him at all. No, he's pushing off, he's guarding, he's moving your hand, a lot of hand combat. You can't touch him after 5 yards. It makes it almost impossible for you to go out and make a play.
Sean Merriman here with us. Based off what you just said, do you think with the physicality that you played and how you hit some quarterbacks, do you think you could play in the NFL these days?
Yeah, I can play, but I'd be playing for free.
Yeah, you'd be suspended all the time,
I'd be suspended. You know, the guy from Denver. Was
Kareem
it from,
Jackson.
Kareem Jackson.
So, you know, I'm glad you bring that up.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't even a flag on the play. And I get it. Sometimes officials miss things, but when you slow it down and when you look at it 10,000 times, sure, I could say when you slow it down, yeah, maybe there should have been a penalty thrown, but in real-time football speed, I think it's a joke this guy's out for 4 games.
It is a joke. And, you know, he was making a football play that ultimately helped his team win the game, right, in a couple different occasions. I get it, right? So I'm not one of these old – because one thing I do hate is the old-school guys who played in the 90s and 80s, right, to come back and say, oh, you know, back when we had, you know, no helmets and no teeth and we played – the game is soft. I'm not one of those guys. I actually do believe that NFL has done a great job at protecting the players, right? No helmet, helmet contact, the crackback blocks. I remember I've seen Hines Ward break people's jaws, right,
yeah.
on just these crackback blocks. I agree with the NFL that quarterbacks shouldn't be hit a certain way, but now you're making it impossible to make a play. What I don't like is this. As you just said, guys got a half a second to make a decision. It was a guy from the Carolina game, too, right? It was a Carolina game where the D-back came in and he got a flag, too. It's impossible to go out there in a split-second decision and make a play that's not going to hurt the offense yeah. without you getting hurt. Because what we got to understand is football is full speed all the time. And so as you're slowing down as a defender, that offensive guy isn't. He's still going full speed. So who can possibly get hurt in that situation? So, yes, protect the offensive guys. But on the defensive side, you got to understand, we're going full speed. So by us letting up is where you create injury. I thank God I had nothing major head-wise or anything
yeah,
like that.
You had the Achilles.
The Achilles. Mm-hmm. But, you know, head-wise, upstairs, all those things, I had anything major because I was going in to make a football play. If I went in and took my foot off the gas and I was worrying about – hurting someone else and try to slow up to protect him, I wouldn't be sitting here saying that. I would have caused injury to myself if that was the happening. So I just don't agree with that. When you look at something, like you said, 10,000 times, you need to look at that in regular speed as the game is played and then base your fines and your ejections or whatever else off of the normal speed of a play.
Talking to Sean Merriman right now, who joins us in studio. The other thing with that, too, is I don't know. Like, we know when someone's intentionally leading with their head and it's a dirty play.
Right.
But when you are wrapping up the tackle, just sometimes naturally, like if I'm coming head on, my head's going to go right into the direction of your helmet or your chest area. And I don't know how to tackle now without totally moving your head to the other side, and then you're maybe risking a neck injury.
You know what? You remember one of my favorite shows with that show called Pros versus Joes?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Were you on that?
No. And good thing I didn't because somebody got hurt, yeah. right? Because you have these people talking all the time and saying, look at his helmet. His helmet contact. I said, listen, why don't you run 15 miles an hour and tackle somebody without your head being nowhere near your body? Let's see how that worked out for you. It's impossible. It's one thing for a guy to intentionally leading with his head, but if his chest or his shoulder pads connect first and then his head or the crown of his head hits underneath the face mask of someone, you can't call that because it's impossible to remove your head
100%.
From your body going that speed. Now, the play with Josh Jacobs was running the football. They fined him, what, $20,000+?
Oh, yeah.
This was a regular running play.
Yeah.
This is a guy that was getting prepared for contact. Right, getting prepared, loaded up, because before you embrace for contact, you are embracing, meaning your body tightens up, meaning your head drops, your shoulder drops, you're embracing for this contact. There is no way not to put your head down. The only one player I've ever played against that can run standing straight up and not get hit straight was Adrian Peterson. That was the only player I've ever played against or I've ever seen, Eric Dickerson back in the day, but the only player I've played against that can run straight up and down and with his knees high, and you can't hit him. That was the only guy.
The other thing, too, is just because you get a penalty called against you, I don't think it should result in a fine. Like, there's a clear line when you know someone should be fined, and you see the fines each and every week. It's becoming a joke that some of these players are losing money.
I think somebody who's been very outspoken about it is J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
He's been very – and so I get it that the NFL is going to do what they're going to do, right? Regardless, they're the big dogs. They're going to continue to do whatever they want to do. That's just what – you know, how they are. But when you have guys like J.J. Watt, somebody who's very well respected, played the game at a high level for a very long time, and you start to hear more and more about these fines and how it's unfair, it could potentially be a real problem because, you know, a guy like J.J. Watt has so much respect.
And clout, yeah.
And clout. Big following, social media, everybody knows who he is. He has people, you know, younger guys he's mentored.
And well-liked, too.
And well-liked.
Which is tough for some defenders to be well-liked.
No, for sure. He has the full board of support by a lot of people. And so when he coming out and saying these things about what's naturally going on, it's going to steamroll a problem. Same thing Tom Brady. Somebody's biggest Tom Brady coming out and saying these things. So I get it. And I want this because I hate being the overtired guy who's saying, oh, they're soft. I think the NFL did exactly what they needed to do because of what happened with the concussion lawsuits and everything else. It's like, okay, we're going to fix that problem. We're going to start fining for this physicality.
But the hypocrisy of that is, okay, we're going to have a heightened awareness. We're going to find more players. Some of it is because of what you're saying with concussions and the lawsuits. The other part is they want to see more offense, and a lot of these rules are conducive to the offense. But then we're going to add in an extra regular season game.
Yeah.
Tell me how that's safe for the players where, sure, you cut out a preseason game, but most of those players weren't playing the preseason anyway, and then we add another regular season game.
I never really had the problem with the extra game as long as guys are compensated for it, right? The game has changed a lot, and I think it was Shady McCoy. Somebody was talking about the double days in practice that we all used to have in training camp. I mean, brutal, right?
The two-a-days now. They're not existent, but training camp now – it's a joke.
I would play 15 years, right? I would play 15 years because the way we practice and how intense and how physical practice was, and I'm not talking about the two-a-day, one-a-day, two-a-day. I'm talking about two-a-day for a month. And the only time we had off is when they took us to a water park or something like, and we were like 10-year-old
kids. Team bonding
day. Yeah, it was like, you know, we were like 10-year-old kids. We get a chance to go to the water park,
right? We don't got to run.
We were like 10-year-old kids. We got a chance to go to the water park. So, in this day and age, the game, you can play longer. The physicality is less. So I don't necessarily mind the extra game as long as it's prorated and guys are compensated for it. If that was the case, I'm totally fine with it. But you're right. Doesn't matter. That's another game of a potential injury is what you're saying. So you're right about that.
It's so frustrating watching your former team in the Chargers because they have all this talent.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say it's only coaching, but they got to get rid of Brandon Staley. And it is surprising to me that he's still the head coach with how ugly this has gotten.
If anybody asks me about my career, I don't have a lot of regrets. The main regret that I do have is not being able to win the ring because of the teams that I played, the guys I played with, and the teams we had from 2005 to 2010 or 11. I mean, we were stacked across the board. We had so much talent and didn't win a ring. This roster and this team they have right now actually can. And that's what's so upsetting about it. And I'm not talking about everybody's expectations and, oh, you know, Justin Herbert, these guys should win 14 games this year. I'm talking about they should be playing a lot better and being in a better situation than they are. And when you have a leader and a coach that is not willing to admit how bad they've been and saying that – I was always with Brandon Staley, always. I think that the Chargers were actually smart by hiring him. He's a great leader. He says and does all the right things. Like, he's going to kill it in a meeting. You have the one-on-one meeting. He's sharp. He's organized. He's smart. He's data-driven. All these things in a meeting. I can 100% see why the Chargers hired him. I would have hired him, too, for that cost and what you were looking for to get out of a coach to go win. Now, the recent conversations in the press conference and things are really, really bothered me and really got under my skin because – everybody knows there's a problem, and not just with the defense, the team. There's an issue. And if you're not willing to come out and say, hey, I'm going – as soon as I get off of this podium right now, I'm leaving here and I'm going back in that building and changes will be made right now. That's what you want to hear from your head coach. Not, hey, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. That's how you lose a locker room. And so if a head coach came in and said that, I don't have respect for him anymore. We all know that there's a problem. Everybody that comes to that game that's watching the Chargers games, we know what kind of team they have. We ain't got to question Justin Herbert. We ain't got to question Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, Derwin James, Kenneth Murray, Kendricks, Eckler. The list goes on. We don't question those guys because we know that they can play. So what's the issue? Now it's putting these guys in position to win football games. And if you're going to say in a press conference that, hey, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, I ain't got no respect for you when you get back to the locker room. That's the issue I have. Your pride can't overplay victory and success. And so what I see now, and it makes me upset because I would much rather, and I'm not saying he's not taking responsibility. He definitely said that's on me, that's on us, coaching staff. But he also said several times that we're not changing, we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
And the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and not changing.
Bingo.
It's crazy to me. Tonight, Cowboys are hosting the Seattle Seahawks to kick off Week 13. Who do you like in that game?
I like the Cowboys. The thing is with the Cowboys, they not the Cowboys fans because they're crazy. But I think the Cowboys have a really good team, and what they're doing this year, they're beating the team they should beat.
Yeah, but when they go up against a great team, they
struggle. And I'm gonna tell you why that's okay with them because of the division they're in. Because their ability to get to the playoffs because of the division they're in. And that's been the breaking point. They need to get in the playoffs so they can have a shot first, right? What, they're 7-7?
8-3.
Yeah, 8-3. And so they're going to beat the team. They're going to destroy the teams they're supposed to beat. They're going to struggle against good teams. They're going to lose against the great ones. But that is enough in that division for where they're coming from to get you in the playoffs so you can have a shot. I wish I could say the same thing about the Chargers, right? Because, you go out and beat the teams you're supposed to beat. You're also sitting at 7 games right now, 8 games, and you still have a hunt for the wild card, right? So I like the Cowboys. Now, I do like this. Still like the Seahawks. You know, the Seahawks and defense. I love the Seahawks team. But I think the Cowboys right now, with their momentum, they're going to beat the Seahawks tonight.
Who do you think gets to the Super Bowl this year out of the AFC?
I mean, the Chiefs, as long as they're the defending champs, I'm always going to look at them first. They're number one. You got to give them the nod. I like the Ravens. I like the Ravens.
And it all comes down to if Lamar stays healthy.
Lamar stays healthy, and that defense playing as great. I think they got the best two tandem inside linebackers in the game right now.
Yeah, Roquan Smith is stuck.
Yeah, Smith and Queen.
Queen, yeah.
Yeah, these guys get after it. The new addition, no one's talking about a lot. They need to get more credit over there. It's my guy Chuck Smith, who they brought in, who was my pass rushing coach during the offseason. I should go to travel to Atlanta to see Chuck and work with him. Got them, their mindset. Davion Clowney is playing better than he has been in the last 3-4 years. All, and to my opinion, to Chuck Smith and that front seven they're building. So I like KC, but you got to watch out for the Ravens, man, because they are a team that you're going to struggle against because of how they're playing style.
And then on Sunday we get the Eagles and the 49ers
right.
in South Philadelphia. Whoever wins this game, it's weird because there's going to be a lot of talking
right.
being done with how ugly this got, but it's going to be tough for these teams to get two victories up against one another. Because I do believe that they're going to meet up in the NFC Championship game again. Who do you think is the better team, the Eagles or the Niners?
Look, the 49ers struggled. They had that 3 or 4 game stretch where they struggled. They had some injuries. I don't think Brock Purdy was fully healthy. I think he was still dealing with some head stuff. In my opinion, I'm not a doctor, but just seeing his drop off and where he was, I think a healthy 49ers team is better than Philly. Now, one thing I'll say about this is that people have been jumping on the Eagles so much this year, and it's so weird.
They're the most criticized 10-1 team I've ever covered.
It's the craziest thing I've ever – it's like they're not playing up there to their potential every week, but they're like, what, 9 or 10-1,
yeah.
Right?
10-1, yeah.
10-1.
Well, I talked to Son Reddick after the game. I was in Philly for the Eagles and Bills, and I said to him, I go, I feel like you guys still haven't played your best brand of football yet. And he goes – people got to realize this isn't last year where we just blew everybody out. Football isn't always pretty. It just matters if we win. And that one loss, and Jalen Hurts doesn't throw the interception at the end of the game, they beat the Jets. They're undefeated.
It's 31 other teams in the National Football League that would love to be barely winning, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the
Chargers.
Yeah. I would, if the Chargers were struggling a struggling 10-1 team, yeah. I would be sitting over here smiling. I'd be the happiest person on earth. And so I think the respect but the reason why they're not getting that same respect is because of how good they was last year, right? Yeah. It brings back to, you know, a conversation I had with Micah Parsons before the season. I said, dude, you're going to see everything, right, on the offensive set this year. You're not a secret no more. When you're not a secret and people know your strong suits, they know Reddick and him coming off the edge. They know now the two D tackles that they got in there that are studs. They know, you know, slot. They know the team, right? They know who you guys got and the very little weak spots you guys have. So you're not coming in tricking anybody anymore. You're not walking in. People are ready for you every
single
week. Yeah, they're ready for you every single week. You're getting every team's best, the Eagles are getting. And so they're beating their best opponent week in and week out by a touchdown, by 3 points, sloppy, barely. So what? And I don't understand that criticism, but I do think a healthy 49ers team is better than the Eagles. And I'm not saying that because any other people are not respecting them. I'm just saying that the many facets and how the 49ers are winning on both sides of the football.
All righty. The floor is yours, my friend. I know you guys got a big card coming up on Saturday, January 6th. Lights out, Extreme Fighting. Tell me the latest, and you can watch it all on Fubo Sports.
Yeah, this one's our biggest card we've had so far. We got Abby Montez and Jackie Cataline on this card. Their main event, and they both fought big organizations before. We brought them over. We got that contract done. I can't wait for them. They are going to put on a show. Nakatani is also co-maining this event with Marte. We got Jake Woodley, who was a D1 wrestler on this card out of Oklahoma. He's fighting another wrestler. He's back on this card. So, yeah, January 6th, we'll be live on Fubo TV, Fubo Sports, Lightside Extreme Fighting 13. If you're in that Long Beach area, SoCal area on the 13th, you want to be in the house with this, get your tickets at Lights Out. Except.com.
He, of course, is Sean Merriman, who would have a whole lot less money if he was playing in the NFL these days with all the fines that he'd be racking up. It was good that you played the time that you did, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No question about that.
Hey, he's Sean Merriman. I'm Zach Gelb. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back on the Zach Gelb Show after these short messages.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Visit BetterHelp.com/positive to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/positive.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. So, I have to laugh at this. Sports Illustrated comes out with their Sports Person of the Year. And before I tell you who wins the award, it's kind of sad what Sports Illustrated has become. Like, I remember as a kid always getting the Sports Illustrated magazine, or even a younger stage than that, SI for Kids. Like, Sports Illustrated used to be a great publication. Like, must read. I remember, like, I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow that I'm going to. I remember when I was a kid going to the doctor's office. Nah, this may sound like me being a little bit of a loser, but I would love going to the doctor's office because they always had the Sports Illustrated. And you would read it when you were in the waiting room. And, you know, I would love if my dad ever brought home the Sports Illustrated magazine. And now it's like a lot of magazines and newspapers, the business is changing. It's not the same as it once was. And there's like a lot of low-hanging fruit that people like kind of eat up or latch onto to just get some clicks. But who thought it was a good idea? And I say this being a big fan of Coach Prime and Deion Sanders, to give Coach Prime the Sports Illustrated Sports Person of the Year. Like, how the heck does that happen? Did they only watch the college football season when Colorado was 3-0? Did they not watch the final 9 weeks of the season when he was 1-8 down the stretch? 1-8 down the stretch. After beating Colorado State in that overtime game where they could have lost, they won one lousy game the rest of the year. And I say that knowing that the program last year only won one game. So there's an improvement, and you don't need a math degree to figure this out. Going from one win to four wins is a solid improvement. But there's a difference in having a solid improvement and then just saying, oh, he's the sports person of the year. Like, just off the top of my head, how do you not go Nikola Jokic? How do you not go Messi? How do you not go Shohei Ohtani? How about DeMar Hamlin? Bruce Bochy? If you want to go with the coach, if you want to go with the manager, Bruce Bochy comes off the couch from retirement, goes to the Rangers, wins a World Series. Guys won four World Series and took also the Padres years ago to the World Series. How about Angel Reese at LSU? I know she's now back from whatever happened there, so maybe that's why you don't give her the award, but she won a national championship. Caitlin Clark. Like, there's a bunch of names right there that are more deserving than Coach Prime. And Coach Prime has been a major story in not only college sports, but in all of sports. What he did this year at Colorado in the beginning was the most talked about story. It was an electric story where he starts off the year and beats TCU, then beats Nebraska, then has that big event against Colorado State. But since then, I don't want to say he lost his appeal. I don't want to say now Colorado's moving in the wrong direction, because none of that would have been true. But when you start up the year 3-0, expectations change. Like, before the year, I said Coach Prime, 4 or 5 wins would be a really successful season. He got 4 wins. So, Zach, don't be hypocritical. Stand by what you said. But when you start the season 3-0, you got to find a way to have more than just one more win the rest of the way. And they didn't. Now, why did that happen? Well, they didn't have an offensive line. They were thin up front. We talked about that before the season started, that, yeah, you could have Travis Hunter. You could have Shedeur Sanders. You could have Shiloh Sanders. But you don't have the big boys in the trenches. You don't have the hog mollies, like Dave Gettleman used to call them. It doesn't require a PhD in football to know that you can't block, you can't get to the quarterback, you can't make a push in the trenches, you're not going to win that many games. So Sports Illustrated, where I don't know if this was actual voters or if it was AI-generated voters, because maybe it is. I read that one article, they have an AI-generated writer, and they were trying to pass it off like it was an actual human being writing these things. So maybe they just had the AI-generated voters here, and that's how they got to Coach Prime. But for him to win Sports Person of the Year, and I love Deion. I love Coach Prime. I liked a lot what he did at Colorado this year. But it's just ridiculous for him to win that. And, like, really, like, let's be real. What the heck does it mean, Sports Person of the Year at Sports Illustrated? It used to be a big deal. That publication used to be a big publication. But now, did anyone really give a rat's ass? Like, if they would have just came out and said Nikola Jokic is the Sports Person of the Year, or DeMar Hamlin, or Shohei Ohtani, or Messi, like whoever it is, would anyone have cared? No, I wouldn't have cared. So I'll be fair here. We would not have talked about this. So maybe this is what they did, where it's not actual genuine award, but it's an award just to get a rise. It's an award to just go get 7 million clicks on an X post or a Twitter post, whatever we call these fakakta websites these days. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it is by SI. And if so, you know, give you a nice little golf clap. Good job, SI. All righty, you got us talking about you. But to actually make a valid case for Coach Prime to be Sports Person of the Year, I won't even read, I'll use a Coach Prime phrase here, I won't even read that bull junk on the explanation as to why Coach Prime won Sports Person of the Year. But come on. And there's seven or eight other people that are more deserving, bare minimum, than him. Now, he got that team to bowl eligibility. He got them to 6-7 wins. Maybe it's a different story. But when you start off 3-0, expectations change, and you find a way to only get one more win the rest of the year, and they choked that game against Stanford, too, there's no reason why he should win Sports Person of the Year. Maybe it's an enjoyable story. It was a talked-about story. It was a nice little big-time jolt of energy right out of the gate in September, early October. But after that, it faded, and it faded in a big way. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we will do the Zach Gelb Show PSA, since it is a Thursday. Also, we got to get into all the latest surrounding Von Miller and the Buffalo Bills. But first up with the latest CBS Sports Radio update. You know what, Ack? Before we toss it, Ack, you remember how Sports Illustrated used to be such a big deal?
I used to run home from school to find it in my mailbox because I subscribed.
And I get it. It's now the way of society where everything's digital and things like that. But to still be known as the brand of Sports Illustrated, and if you're trying to take yourself seriously, given Deion Sanders the Sports Person of the Year, I don't understand it outside of just to get this reaction out of people.
It's like when the Yankees wanted to move to New Jersey. So
you're not wrong. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. You can stream the NFL and Westwood One for free, sponsored by AutoZone. All season long, you can listen to every Westwood One broadcast of the NFL live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports, or on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. AutoZone's free battery testing and charging is available for free at your local AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. It is a Thursday, so let's get to a Zach Gelb Show PSA.
It's a Thursday. What do you have to say? It's the weekly Zach Gelb Show PSA.
Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!
Hey! Alrighty, I'm going to start it off with the Hall of Fame. So for years, I was annoyed that Jerry Kramer was not in the Hall of Fame. He eventually got into the Hall of Fame. I was also annoyed for a while that Leroy Butler wasn't in the Hall of Fame. He got into the Hall of Fame. So the other day, 25 semifinalists got announced for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Eventually, this gets reduced again to 15 finalists before the final voting process for the class of 2024 that we find out Super Bowl week in February. So here are the 25 finalists. Eric Allen, Jared Allen, Willie Anderson, our colleague Tiki Barber. Congrats, Teak. Anquan Boldin, Jahari Evans, London Fletcher, Dwight Freeney. It's crazy that Dwight Freeney still isn't in the Hall of Fame. Antonio Gates, Eddie George, James Harrison, Rodney Harrison, Devin Hester, Torrey Holt. Crazy Torrey Holt's not in the Hall of Fame. Andre Johnson, crazy he's not in the Hall of Fame. Robert Mathis, Julius Peppers, Steve Smith, Fred Taylor, Hines Ward, Ricky Waters, Vince Wilfork, and Darren Woodson. So, my PSA is going to be making a case for one guy that's on that list, and then also one guy that is not on the list. For Rodney Harrison, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He's a two-time first-team All-Pro. He's on not one but two 50-anniversary teams for the Patriots and for the Chargers. He had seven seasons of 100-plus tackles. By the way, Rodney Harrison was the first player in NFL history to have 30 sacks and 30 interceptions in his career. The other one, Ray Lewis. And oh yeah, in the playoffs, championship moments, Rodney Harrison was awesome. He won Super Bowl 38, Super Bowl 39, where quite frankly, Rodney Harrison should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, even though I love Deion Branch. But in those six postseason games he had during that two-year stretch, he had six interceptions, a touchdown, also had two sacks, two tackles for loss, and 47 tackles. Yeah. This guy, Rodney Harrison, or two forced fumbles, I should have said, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. Now, on the other side, I'm a little bit annoyed that Sean Alexander, who was an MVP in the league, is not a semifinalist for the Hall of Fame, or doesn't even get like one conversation about Sean Alexander making the Hall of Fame. Has there ever been a push for this guy? What does everyone say about Sean Alexander? Oh, Zach, he didn't play enough years in the NFL. Well, the guy has the eighth most rushing touchdowns in NFL history. So he didn't play enough years, but he's still top 10, number 8 to be exact, for rushing touchdowns in NFL history. He had 100 rushing touchdowns. And there was a stretch from 2001 to all the way to 2005 where this dude was just an absolute dog on the field. In 2001, 1,318 yards and 14 rushing touchdowns. 2002, 1,175 rushing yards, 16 touchdowns. 2003, 1,435 yards, 14 touchdowns. 2004, 1,696 rushing yards and 6 touchdowns. And yeah, by the way, there was an MVP season of 2005 where he ran the Seahawks to the Super Bowl, and he had 1,880 rushing yards and 27 touchdowns. So, guy has an MVP. Guy took a team to a Super Bowl. And also has 100 rushing touchdowns, eighth most all time. No one makes a peep about Sean Alexander going to the Hall of Fame. So that's my PSA. Sean Alexander should be a Hall of Famer. Rodney Harrison should be a Hall of Famer as well. At least Rodney Harrison has a seat at the table to try to get himself in the Hall. Seems like everyone has forgotten about Sean Alexander. Stuart Kovacs, what is your Zach Gelb Show PSA today, my friend?
Yeah, mine has to do, not sports related, mine are elevators. Elevators in a lot of different places. Elevators in this building.
Rough.
Especially if you get here at the wrong time, like 9 or 10 in the morning when a lot of people are coming to work in this building. It sometimes takes me 10 minutes to get to the 10th floor, which is...
What time do you get into work?
Around 10 usually, a little after 10 o'clock. So that's when I guess people are still trying to, you know,
wind
in.
And that's still not a big rush.
No. So I can't imagine what it's like at like 8:30 or 9. So it's a disaster getting in. It takes sometimes, like I said, 5, 7, 10 minutes to get up here. There's been times where I've been in line to get to the elevator from outside of the elevator shaft before you even scan your badge to get into the building. So that's what, so it's not only here too, it's also where I live. I live in a 4-floor apartment building with an elevator.
Only for how many elevators I have?
A lot. So it's like a bigger building. So there's multiple elevators, but by my physical apartment, there's only one that I could really get to unless I walk a long
way. And you're waiting 5 to 10 minutes to get up?
I mean, no, it's usually going down. If you miss it by like a second, it's a very, very slow elevator. Like it'll go like 4th floor, da 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 da, 3rd. It's just like a very slow track. So if you just miss it, you're kind of in trouble. And that's happened to me in the past where I've missed my shuttle to get to. To get to here to work, basically, because of the elevator being too slow. Also because of me being too late as well. But the elevator speed for both me and my apartment and where I work, not ideal, I would say.
Gotcha. I have one good elevator story, actually.
Good.
I was in Philadelphia, and I was going to, what's the name of the market? There's a great market right in the heart of the city, legendary spot. It's going to kill me that I can't remember the name of the market, but whatever. It's insignificant to the story. And we're going down to that market, and there's a parking garage. And we park in the parking garage, clearly. We're on, like, the 4th or 5th floor, and we get in the elevator. And I was in college, like, stupid, right? Teenager, you know, 18, 19 years old. And one of my Reading Terminal Market is the name of the market. And one of my buddies goes to me, my buddy Mike, he goes, "You won't jump up and down in the elevator?" I'm like, "You mean I won't jump up and down the elevator?" It was just us two. So I jump up and down in the elevator, stop the elevator. And I'm sitting in this elevator. And this elevator was hot. I love my buddy Mike. Not the most ideal person, though, in the world to be stuck within the elevator. He'll tell you, like, his entire life story. And I'm freaking out. And we hit the big red button on the elevator. And, you know, it dials 911, and they eventually get the fire department. And I'm looking around this elevator because I'm like, uh-oh. Like, I may be in trouble if there's a camera. Didn't see a camera. Fire department gets there. They open up the elevator. And I'm like, thank you so much to the fireman. Pulls us out of the elevator, and I bolted bolted out of that parking lot complex because I didn't want to try to have anything get back to me about, oh, there was the fat kid that was jumping up and down in an elevator. But I was very concerned at that point.
Yeah, I would be too. I've never been stuck in an elevator, so I don't know what that would be like. That can't be fun, though.
I had a friend get stuck in an elevator when we were in Italy. I was not in the elevator. I took like the elevator down. It was one of those scenarios like you're talking about where there's a buildup to the elevator. I took the elevator down, got there. When the elevator went back up, my buddy got stuck in the elevator. He was stuck in there for like an hour. It took forever in Italy to get everyone out of the elevator. So there's your Zach Gelb Show PSA. I got to get to this Von Miller story. So, you know, we've all read today that he's accused and there's an arrest warrant out there where he's accused of assaulting his pregnant girlfriend at their high-rise apartment in Dallas, according to multiple police sources. Obviously, the details from what we know are not good. He left the scene of what did transpire. And the morning we were made aware of an incident involving Von Miller, we are in the process of gathering more information and we'll have no further comment at this point. That's what the Buffalo Bills did say. And officers learned that Miller and the alleged victim were in an argument when Miller allegedly assaulted her, police said. I don't want to rush to any conclusions. Clearly, when you hear the allegations, if they are true, Von Miller is a sick, twisted human being and he shouldn't play for the rest of the season. But let's see what are the facts here that do come on out. All I can tell you right now that there's a warrant out there for his arrest. Von Miller has not been playing great for the Bills coming off this injury. Von Miller also has a big contract too. So I don't want to be disingenuous here in the situation, but sometimes we see in sports a player is playing at this high level and something disgusting goes on off the field. And if there's no video, then sometimes you are able to skate free, or it's all right, let's not have a rush to make sure that we're going to say this person's guilty and have due process and the player gets to continue to play. But even though with the legendary status Von Miller has in the game, winning two Super Bowls, winning a Super Bowl MVP, this year he has not been the same player, and he was brought to Buffalo to win a championship. And I'm sure the Bills would love to find a way now out of this contract. And I don't know all the litigious situation that's going to happen here, a lawsuit and language in the contract, I should say. But if he did this, this is just ugly, ugly, ugly stuff. That goes without being said. You know, putting your hands on a woman is repulsive, and putting your hands on a pregnant woman makes me want to even throw up even more. So if this is true, he should not play the rest of the season, but it's just more and more that the Buffalo Bills have to deal with. They've already been a disappointing team this year at 6-6, and you're trying to regroup, you're trying to refocus and get your team back on track where you're going to probably have to go 4-1 to find a way to make the postseason, and now you're dealing with this just terrible situation where there's no winners here when you look at what Von Miller is being accused of. So we'll take a break. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will get back into the Week 13 that's going to kick off later tonight after 8 p.m. on Amazon Prime. You can listen to the game on Westwood One. It's the Dallas Cowboys hosting the Seattle Seahawks. So we'll get into a little bit more Cowboys-Seahawks conversation when we return. Also, still to come, Dan Lanning, quack, quack, the coach of the Oregon Ducks, is going to stop by at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific. The Ducks, they will have a rematch of the game of the year, Oregon-Washington, where Washington did get a victory. It's Oregon's only loss of the season. That comes your way tomorrow in the Pac-12 championship game. Dan Lanning will join us in about 20, 25 minutes.